Horse of a Different Color by Ralph Moody, University of Nebraska Press, 1968. We're on Chapter 8, The Hog Cycle. Father, thank you for bringing both Tammy and I home safely. Thank you that we're back here in Alabama and our travel's over so we can start recording and doing things more consistently. Thank you for routine, things that we take for granted that are a joy to daily life. So let each child and grandchild who hears this enjoy the routine of daily life as they go through the learning and all that they're growing in. In Jesus' name, amen. After 17 consecutive weeks of decline, the prime steer market held steady during the third week of April, and Bob was sure it would bounce back to its December peak any day. I had no such illusions, and with a little help from George Minor, convinced Bob that it would be wasteful to hold our stock another week. Our hogs were already becoming overweight, and after cattle reach their prime, any added weight is lardy fat that reduces their value. I decided to ship 6 carloads of trading stock I'd accumulated at the same time we shipped the feedlot stock, so I ordered 18 cars for the 24th of April and applied for returning stockman's passes for Bob and me. That Saturday, I had my biggest trading day of the spring, and more than 20 men stayed to help load the stock and see the train away. As always, I accompanied stock to Kansas City, or when I accompanied stock to Kansas City, I wore blue denim jeans and jumper, taking along only a change of underwear. But Bob wore his Sunday suit and carried a suitcase. Riding 2 nights and a day in the caboose of a cattle train and trying to sleep on a bare wooden bench is no fun under any circumstances. But it is infinitely worse in wet clothes, and mine were sopping almost the entire trip. It began raining an hour after the train pulled away from Cedar Bluffs, and there was no let-up. Bob, in his best clothes, was no help. And with so many cars, I had to run forward a quarter mile at every stop to make sure we had no cattle down and injured. It was still pouring when we reached Kansas City, and in spite of the discomfort, I was pleased, for on long hauls, livestock shrinks less in rainy weather than in fair. Our train was one of the first to pull into the stockyards Monday morning, and our stock came through in exceptionally good condition. The yards were 6 inches deep in muck, so Bob didn't help with the unloading. But I'd brought along a pocket full of half dollars for the roustabouts and was able to get our stock penned in good positions. I had all the hogs penned close together and with my trading cattle nearby, but the steers, being prime, had to be penned fully a quarter mile away. Regardless of the muck and rain, Bob wanted to stand as owner beside the auctioneer when our steers were sold, and I was glad to be free so I could look after the rest of the stock. The hog market was good that morning, up half a dollar over from Saturday, and although our feedlot hogs were somewhat overweight, they did well, netting almost $5,000. My trading stock did well too, averaging a little better than $60 profit per car. It was 8 o'clock when my last cattle were sold, and when I went to our agent's office, Bob had been gone more than an hour. He ran into some friends, the agent told me, and they went celebrating as soon as the last carload was auctioned. Bob said you'd look after the paper end of the deal. Well, there was nothing but paperwork to be done regarding our feedlot stock. As was customary with mortgage stock, ours had been shipped subject to attachment for the amount of our loans. And since the loans were greater than the value of the stock, the entire net proceeds had to be paid directly to the First State Bank of Cedar Bluffs. Even so, I couldn't blame Bob too much for doing a bit of celebrating. In spite of the poor quality feed and the drop in fat cattle prices, our steers had brought very close to $33,000 net. As soon as the agent and I had completed the paperwork and I'd sent Bones a telegram, I picked up my bundle from the train caboose and went to the Stockman's Hotel. Not because I expected Bob to have been there, but to make conversation as I signed the register. I asked, "Seen Bob Wilson this morning?" "I sure have," the clerk told me. "Him and his friends come in half an hour ago, celebrating Bob's good luck. He tells me he brought in 10 carloads of prime steers this morning, topped the market with them, and cleaned up a profit of better than $30,000. A train whistle spooked some of his cattle while he was unloading, and they run him down in the slot. He was plastered with muck from head to heels and on his way uptown to buy some new clothes. I thought I smelled a mouse, so I asked, "Did he just stop in to leave his suitcase and cash a check?" Yeah, he said the poor guy couldn't wait for the banks to open up, not in the shape his clothes was in, but 300 bucks was all I had on hand. There was no sense in telling the clerk that Bob hadn't a dime in the bank and that the check was worthless. But with the roll in his pocket, I knew he'd be off on a wild spending spree, and there'd be less sense in trying to find him. I spent the rest of that day and all the next around the hotel lobby waiting for Bob to show up and listening to the stockmen and agents. Those who had been the most optimistic in December were wailing that any man who stayed in the feeding business was bound to go broke. My own agent still thought that prospects were good, and a stockman with agricultural school training argued that a feeder could break exactly even at the current prices. His argument interested me particularly, for Bob and I still had nearly enough corn and hay on hand to feed 300 steers for 4 months. Bob came back to the hotel just in time for us to catch the Denver Night Express. As I expected, he was barely able to keep on his feet, couldn't remember where he'd been, and didn't have a penny in his pockets. He was wearing a new brown suit and hat, the worse for rain and mud, but was carrying three or four packages that were dry and in good shape. "There's presents in 'em for Marguerite and the girls," he told me groggily. "Shirtwaist with lace on the collar and the likes of that." He slept every minute until we transferred to the branch line, and then became as restless as a hound with fleas. The moment we pulled into Cedar Bluffs, he hurried away toward home with the parcels, but forgot his suitcase. I left it with Dad Haynes and went to the telephone office with the box of candy I'd brought for Effie. She looked as sad as if she were at a funeral, and her eyes failed to light up as usual when she saw the candy box. "You shouldn't have went and spent money on candy for me," she said. "Not after the kind of licking you must have took on them steers you fed. I was scared for you right from the off start off. How bad did you get hurt?" "Not enough to amount to anything," I told her. "My loss on the whole deal was barely more than $500, and that's nothing when you consider that the price of fat cattle dropped 30% while we had our steers on feed." "Nothing," she scoffed. "You might call $500 nothing, but I sure don't. Up till the war commenced, that's more than what I got for minding the switchboard a whole year. And look at the 4 months of hard work you've lost to boot." "I'd like to lose 4 months the same way every winter for the next 50 years," I told her. "Since Christmas, I've made enough on my trading and shipping business to pay my share of the living expenses, buy hog wire fencing for the place, pay interest on my trading account loans, and save $1,800. Besides that, I've learned enough about livestock feeding to be worth every penny it cost me." Before I'd finished, Effie had lost her mournful appearance and was eyeing the candy box hungrily. "Well, then," she said, "I ain't going to feel so bad over you fetching me candy, excepting only that you're going to fat me up like a Poland China sow if you don't quit it. You don't aim to go back into the feeding business, do you, bud?" "I don't know," I said. "Most stockmen at Kansas City are afraid of cattle feeding now, but our corn and hay will go to ruin if it isn't used before winter. I'm not going to do anything until I talk with George Miner." "Now you're beginning to show a smidgen of common sense," she told me as she eagerly untied the candy box ribbon. "And you'd better go see Bones before he jumps clean out of his hide. He's called you 3 times already, telling me to send you right over to the bank as soon as ever I laid eyes on you." When I crossed the street to the bank, Bones came hurrying to meet me as if I were the governor instead of a kid in dirty blue denims, congratulating me on how well we'd done with the steers in the face of a demoralized fat cattle market. He led me back to his desk, pulled up a chair, and began urging that Bob and I put 500 steers into the feedlot right away. I told him about the conversations I'd heard at Kansas City and said I wasn't going to make up my mind until I talked with George Miner. Snatching up the phone receiver, he whirled the crank and asked Effie to get George on the line. I thought it might be a good time to get in a whack for Bob. So, as we waited, I said, "Oh, by the way, Bob had to write a check for some cash while we were down to the city. The rain and muck of the yards ruined his suit. And while he was getting another one, he bought some clothes for his wife and the children." I was careful not to mention the amount of the check, and Bones didn't ask. He just waved a hand and said, "That's okay. Tell him to drop in and sign a note for the next time he's..." "Hello, hello, George. This is Harry. Bud Moody is here with me. Just got back from the city, and we've been talking about him and Bob putting in another bunch of feeder cattle. We'd like to get your ideas on it if you could spare time to drop by." "Fine. Much obliged, George." George came right away, but he wouldn't do any talking until I'd repeated all that I'd heard in Kansas City. "Well," he said, Down there where the trading goes on every day, they ought to know what the fat cattle market's going to do if anybody does. But I misdoubt me that anybody does. Instead of being the worth of stuff, market price is only a measure of how bad one man wants something and another man wants to get rid of it. If you take the way prices have been running lately, bacon hogs fetching $1 a hundred more than prime steers, that's hind end foremost. Ever since I can recollect, except when the market was on a spree, you understand, fat steers have fetched around $1 more than top grade hogs. Sooner or later, it'll straighten itself out again. But your guess on when it'll come about is as good as anybody else's. But aren't hogs as apt to drop $2 as fat steers are to go up, I asked? No, I don't reckon so, he said. Most stockmen never take note of it. But the hog market generally always runs in 9-month cycles. And it's only 4 months since the upswing commenced, right after Christmas. What do you mean by cycles? I asked. Well, he said, I suppose you know that it's close to 4 months from the time a sow's bred till she has her litter. If she's a good brood sow, and the pigs are put on corn as soon as they're weaned, they'll be bacon hog size and ready for market by the time they're 5 months old. That's what I call a hog cycle. And if a man pays careful heed to it, he ought to be able to figure out, by and large, of course, about how the hog market will behave for a spell ahead. I understand the cycle, I said, but not how it would help a man figure out what the market's going to do. Then you don't know farmers as good as a livestock dealer ought to know them, he told me. When the price of hogs goes down, 10 farmers out of a dozen stop breeding their sows, figuring there's no profit in raising pigs. 9 months later, hogs get scarcer than hen's teeth, so the price goes to shooting up. And every one of them farmers goes to breeding his sows again. By the time another 9 months rolls around, bacon hogs are plentiful as flies around a slaughterhouse, and there's just about the same demand for them, so the bottom drops out of the market. Of course, that's 9 months. That 9 months can stretch out to 10 or even 11, depending on the price of corn. If it's high, most farmers hold back a mite on the feed, so it takes the hogs a few weeks longer to grow to market size. How long is the cycle for beef cattle, I asked. If you put it that way, I'd have to say there wasn't one, he told me. You see, it's upwards of 3 years from the breeding of a cow till her calf is ready for the beef market. That's so long that raisers don't pay much mind to a couple of dollars up or down in the market. Mostly, their breeding depends on how much pasture they've got, how the grass is doing, and how many head of stock it will support. Of course, there's what you might call a cycle in the price of prime fat cattle, because if you take only 3 or 4 months to put the fat on, because it takes only 3 or 4 months to put the fat on them. Most generally, you'll find that feeders are like hog farmers. When the market's bad, there won't many of them put a new bunch of steers on the feed. So in about 4 months, there's a shortage of prime beef. Then the price goes to rising. Every feeder goes to fill in his lot. And in another 4 months, the seesaw goes down again. It seemed to me that George was trying to give us his opinion in a roundabout way, so I said, it's more than 4 months since the fat cattle market began falling, and feeder steers are way down too. So there can't have been many put into feedlots lately. Don't you think this might be the right time for Bob and me to put another bunch into the lot? The slightest trace of a grin broadened George's lips. And he told me, well, son, like I told you about the hogs last December, I ain't selling any cattle right now, but I ain't advising you to buy none either. A man ought to make up his own mind and not go too much on what somebody else thinks. How does Bob feel about putting in another bunch now? You know Bob, I said. He'd have put in 1,000 head last December if he could have borrowed enough to buy them. George got up, stretched, and said, yep, old Bob. He kind of likes to jump in with both feet, don't he? Sometimes a man wins big by doing that, but it's awful easy to get mired if he happens to light on a soft spot. Reckon I'd better be getting on home, or Irene might suspicion that I've run off with the new school, ma'am. After listening to George, Bones seemed no more anxious than I to risk lighting on a soft spot, but agreed to lend Bob and me whatever we needed to put in another 300 steers and half that number of pigs, on the same terms and conditions as our first loan. For the next 3 days, Bob and I were on the go from dawn till dark, and lucky there were 14 hours of daylight at that time of year. Late Friday afternoon, we finished our rounds, having bought 150 pigs and nearly 500 steers. By 6 o'clock Saturday morning, stock began pouring in from every point of the compass. George came over to help me check it in, and Bob did the sorting. All the pigs and the 300 best steers were put into the feedlot, the remainder divided into 6 carloads for shipping. During the afternoon, George and I loaded the cars while Bob, with a couple of boys to help him, put all the new feedlot steers across the scales, and no feeder could have wished for finer stock. I love you guys, and I hope you're able to follow that discussion of scarcity and plenty. So when people get scared and when they are anxious, I love you.